Blog Talk Radio.
And a good evening, sports fans. It is the beginning of the football season.
Tell me how you're standing, and hope that you might uncover the seal. You tell me what you...
Good evening, everybody. How are we doing tonight? It is Sunday, August 4th, 2013, and the NFL preseason begins in about a half hour with the Hall of Fame game between the Dallas Cowboys and the Miami Dolphins. We're going to get into our, starting our NFC divisional previews. Tonight we are going to discuss the NFC East and the AFC West. I'll go through each team, see what everyone's strengths and weaknesses are, and a prediction for how each team is going to finish. We'll get into some baseball talk a little bit later on. I want to discuss the two hottest teams in Major League Baseball right now. Everyone is talking about the Dodgers because, one, it's a bigger market. They have the big up-and-coming star, Yasiel Puig. But I also want to talk about the Tampa Bay Rays and what they've been doing over the past month or so to just go stride for stride with those LA Dodgers. If we have some time, we may get into a little NHL hockey. We may have a special guest joining us later on to talk some Devils hockey. We will have Randy Zelia, founder of Back Sports Page, joining us at 8 o'clock. I want to get into some Yankee baseball with him. See how he feels about what's going on with Alex Rodriguez and his impending suspension tomorrow. And also how he feels about what the rest of the season is going to entail for those Yankees. Number to join the program tonight, 760-283-0846. Once again, 760-283-0846. You can follow the show's Twitter page at Beyond the Bench. We're going to try and do a pretty regular question of the day to try and get some of your viewpoints on any sort of topic. So make sure you follow us there. You can also follow me on Twitter at rstern33bsp, at rstern33bsp. You can also find Backsports Page, www.backsportspage.com. Find them on Twitter at Backsports Page or facebook.com/backsportspage. We have a lot of interesting interviews, some spotlights coming up on a bunch of your different, some of your favorite players. I know we've been working with NBA great Kenny Anderson on with his book. So some good things are definitely happening with Back Sports Page. Randy was at Giants training camp earlier today as part of a media day. I was there on Monday, almost a week ago, And so with that, we will get into our NFC East preview. A little teaser there. All right, so we're going to start off with the New York Giants. I was able to get over to East Rutherford, the new training camp home of the Giants. They did do their training camp there 2 years ago, in fact, the year they won Super Bowl 46. They were not able to secure a contract with the University of Albany because of the lockout. They did go back to Albany last year, and then there were issues with, of all things, the beds in the dorms, and a lot of the players were complaining that it was affecting their backs, so that ended the long run that the Giants had at the University of Albany, and they are now at the Quest Diagnostics Training Facility, formerly the Timex Performance Center, right next door to MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford. It's a beautiful facility. I know they do tours. If you are in the area, I highly recommend doing a tour of the facility. It is absolutely one of a kind. I see a lot of tradition in there, a lot of inspiring quotes on the walls, and it gives you chills when you see some of these pictures, so it's real cool. I was able to watch the entire practice on Monday. I believe that was their third practice of training camp. And if there was one thing that stood out to me about what I was watching in practice is that they have a wide receiver who is going to break out this year. Reuben Randall is going to be the breakout wide receiver star of the NFL this year. Now, I know, yeah, sure, it was one practice that I saw, but it's not just what I saw. It's what I'm reading from Tom Coughlin's reports, what I'm hearing from Kevin Gilbride, what I'm hearing from other Giants beat writers who have been with the team day in, day out. Reuben Randall, I know, has been the absolute best wide receiver on the field so far in training camp. That's nothing to take away from Victor Cruz. Victor Cruz has looked good too. Hakeem Nicks has still been battling his injuries, as he tends to do a lot. This time it's a groin, and it's always something with him. So especially if you're looking at Hakeem Nicks missing any time this year, Reuben Randall is primed to become the breakout star. He's doing everything right. He's showing elusive speed. He's running great routes. His hands have gotten a lot better, and that's one thing that I'm pretty sure of. I think the Giants' offense will not have any problems scoring points. If Hakeem Nicks stays healthy, they now have three dynamic targets on the outside or in the slot between Nicks, Cruz, and Randall. They also have another new target at tight end, and this is one move that kind of flew under the radar, which I absolutely loved. They brought in Brandon Myers, the tight end from Oakland, who had a 73 catch year last year when they were the Oakland Raiders offense looked worse than a lot of college offenses would have looked against NFL defenses. So when you can say that you're the absolute star of an offense where you're the primary pass catcher And now you're coming in and you're going to see single coverage all the time because of the dynamic players that the Giants have at wide receiver and in the backfield. Brandon Myers, and we all know Eli Manning loves his tight ends, absolutely loves his tight ends. Dating back, we had Shockey, Kevin Boss, who was, I believe, a fifth-round draft pick and was one of the key components to the Giants winning Super Bowl 42. Martellus Bennett, who had been in the wings of, or in the shadow of Jason Witten when he was with the Cowboys, comes and has a very good year last year. And that's because Eli loves looking for his tight end. One of the reasons why Eli Manning stays so healthy is because he gets rid of the ball. He's okay with throwing the ball away. But he also knows that if he doesn't see anything developing quickly on the outside, he has safety nets that he is more than willing to dump it off to. Ahmad Bradshaw thrived in that role coming out of the backfield. We've had a couple different tight ends. So Brandon Myers, I believe, is also primed to be one of the top 10 tight ends in the league this year. The backfield is going to be primarily split. You may see a 60-40, maybe a 65-35 split between David Wilson and Andre Brown. David Wilson, who has been called by Tom Coughlin the fastest player he's ever seen on an NFL field. And as someone who's been able to see him just in practice, I absolutely believe it. This kid, he has the ability to stop on a dime. If he can hold on to the ball, and there was an issue with him in college, and on his first carry of the year last year, it was an issue. He fumbled in the opening game against the Cowboys, and it was a big fumble. It was early in the game, but it was when the Giants were driving, looking to go up by two scores. David Wilson fumbled on his first attempt, and then he rode the pine for weeks. Everyone says that David Wilson needs to be able to hold on to the ball, but when he was given more opportunity later in the year, when Andre Brown broke his leg, and we were seeing Ahmad Bradshaw with some of his ailments, when David Wilson was given the opportunity, he didn't fumble again the rest of the year. The most interesting thing about David Wilson this year is going to be whether or not the Giants ask him to be their primary kick returner. He was probably the best kick returner in the game last year. He was able to set the Giants up with great field position, and there were two games that really stick out to you against real good teams that the field position, which David Wilson was able to give them on kickoffs, really set the tone for the game. And one was the game in San Francisco. The Giants won 26-3, so he only had two kickoff returns. Both of them put them into San Fran territory. The other game was the game against the New Orleans Saints. That game, David Wilson broke the Giants' all-time record for all-purpose yards. He had, it was 283 all-purpose yards. He had a kick return for a touchdown. He had over 100 yards rushing. That was the David Wilson show. So if that, I'm not saying we're going to see that player every game, but if we can get something close to what you saw in those games from David Wilson, the Giants will be in good hands. The only thing with David Wilson is that he will not be the goal line back. That will be in the hands of Andre Brown. If for only reason is that when Andre Brown was given the opportunity, he had the highest success rate of carries inside the 10-yard line converted into a touchdown of anybody in the NFL last year. With I think it was at least 20 opportunities or 10 opportunities. Andre Brown had the highest success rate. So David Wilson will, I'm sure he'll be definitely be able, especially if for you fantasy players, David Wilson will be able to give you points because he'll be able to break some long touchdowns. But if you're looking for those the goal line touches, I really think that the majority of them are going to come from Andre Brown. The issue with the Giants will be their defense. The defense was very porous last year, and a lot of that was due to health of their front four and their secondary. The Giants' front four is what sets the tone for the entire defense. Jason Pierre-Paul was battling injuries. Justin Tuck never looked to be the Justin Tuck role we've seen over the past couple of years. O.C. Umenyora, again, is now gone. So, Pierre-Paul, I have a feeling we're not going to see him until week three. I know he's going to try everything to get back for week one. The Giants have two big games to open up the season. In Dallas against the Cowboys and at home against Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. So those are two big games that the Giants would love to have Jason Pierre-Paul healthy and in their lineup. He is coming off back surgery. So whether or not he is able to get into the week one lineup, we'll know more over the next 2 or 3 weeks. But he's also a player that you don't want to rush back until he's fully healthy, because he's someone that means more to the Giants long term than in the short term. And you saw that in the 2011 season when the Giants won the Super Bowl. He could have been in the mention for Defensive Player of the Year. The secondary, it seems as if Prince Amukamara is in line to become the number one cornerback this year, as he is outplaying Corey Webster in training camp. And if it's anything from what we saw last year, it's not going to be that tough for someone to outplay Corey Webster. And Webster, when I was there at practice on Monday, was getting beat by second and third teamers down the field. I know Lewis Murphy has speed that no one in the Giants secondary can contain, and they were doing single coverage on it, but Murphy just blew right by him and was just overthrown by David Carr for a long touchdown. We still haven't seen Terrell Thomas on the field. Terrell Thomas, who has missed the last 2 years because of knee injuries on both knees, is probably going to be asked to either be the nickel or dime back or move to safety. Now, the Giants' safety spot is jam-packed. You have Antrell Roll, who is perennially one of the top safeties in the league. Stevie Brown, who had a breakout year last year, led the entire National Football League in interceptions. They brought in Ryan Mundy from the Pittsburgh Steelers, who has been looking good in practice from what I've read. And then the Giants also have a kid that they drafted in the fifth round who I am enamored with. I think this kid has all the physical tools necessary to be a really good safety. You very rarely see safeties who are 6'4", 220 pounds. But Cooper Taylor out of Richmond is just an absolute physical specimen when it comes to other players who play the safety position. If he can get a grasp of the playbook of different coverages that the Giants are going to ask him to play, getting reads on what routes tight ends, slot receivers are going to be running, Cooper Taylor is going to have a good career if he can get a grasp of that. If he can put in the necessary tool, the necessary work off the field, he has all the tools necessary on the field. His size, speed, leaping ability, his vertical, from what I saw in practice, was ridiculous. So it's going. I want to see this kid end up beating out, even though I like the way Ryan Mundy plays. I'm really looking forward to Cooper Taylor being a prominent member of the Giants secondary. One thing that you may see Perry Fuel ask is you may see him ask Cooper Taylor to put on some weight and to help out the Giants linebacking core. So it's a lot of what the Giants are going to do this year is going to be dependent on the defense. The offense, I really think, is going to be solid, be able to score anywhere between 24 to 30 points every given week, at least 24 to 30 points every given week. But it's all going to be a question of whether or not they can stop opposing offenses. The one thing that is better off for the Giants this year than in past years is two reasons schedule related. The Giants, two out of the last 3 years have had the toughest schedule in the NFL when you look at the previous season's records and also the backloading of the schedule. The Giants have always seemed to have a first half that they can coast through, and you always see the Giants halfway through the season, 5-3, 6-2, somewhere around there. And then they just have brutal second halves. They have a very spread out schedule, and it's among the easiest in the league. So that's the reason. And when I break down the rest of the NFC East, I will do that real quickly before Randy Zelia joins us. Why I'm picking the Giants to win the division. We'll look into the Dallas Cowboys, and the Cowboys are taking on the Dolphins tonight in the Hall of Fame game, and they start in a couple minutes. And the same way as it is every year, the biggest question going into the season for the Cowboys is going to be Tony Romo. Is this the year we see Tony Romo not just a good stats quarterback, but as a good NFL quarterback? Remember, because especially for you fantasy players, Tony Romo is a real good fantasy quarterback, because if you throw three touchdowns and one interception, that's a good fantasy day. But if you throw three touchdowns in the first half and it's a tie game in the second half. And in the fourth quarter, that's when you throw your interception and it sets up a go-ahead score for the other team. That's not a good real quarterback, and that's what we've seen from Tony Romo too many times in the past. Tony Romo needs to, and in my opinion, this is the make-or-break year for him. He has a budding star at wide receiver in Dez Bryant. Dez Bryant, over the second half of the year last year, was one of the three best wide receivers in the entire NFL. And on the other side, he has Miles Austin. Miles Austin has been a reliable player for him in the past. Last year ran into a lot of injury trouble. Hasn't really established himself so far this year in training camp. Miles Austin is going to be a key figure to that team. The other key figure to the team is going to be DeMarco Murray. DeMarco Murray has shown in the past when he stays healthy that he can be a very productive NFL running back. But he has not proved yet that he can stay healthy through a full season, whether at the NFL level or the college level. So DeMarco Murray, if he can stay healthy, that will only lead to good things for the Cowboys. Over in Washington, what else can you say? Is Robert Griffin's knee going to hold up? I believe it will hold up from a couple reasons. You look at different players who have come back from ACL injuries very recently, and they've come back very strong. Now, a lot of the torque that gets put onto Robert Griffin III's legs is caused by his ability to juke outside the pocket. I don't believe the Redskins are going to allow him to be as free with his running as he was last year, which means we're going to see this year whether or not Robert Griffin III is able to become a pocket passer. And I'm not so certain that he is able to do that. A lot of the success from the Redskins offense last year was due to the effectiveness of the play-action pass. And, I mean, Alfred Morris had a historical year as a sixth or seventh round rookie coming out of nowhere and rushing for 1,600 yards. Is he going to be able to replicate that or come close to it? I think he will be able to get more opportunities because I think a lot of the different running plays that were scheduled to go to Robert Griffin III, that maybe you see a couple more go to Alfred Morris instead because they don't want Griffin to be as lucid with his running. So the defense for the Redskins is going to be their biggest issue. They were a very inconsistent defense last year. That's going to be helped if you can get someone like if Ryan Kerrigan can stay on the field, if Brian Arakpo can stay on the field. So the health of the Redskins defense is going to be, I think, the determining factor as to who finishes second, who finishes third this year in the NFC East. And finally, we roll into Philly. And all there has been negativity coming out of Philly camp so far. You have early on Jeremy Maclin, first day of practice, tears his ACL. Jeremy Maclin is the most complete wide receiver on the Philadelphia Eagles. He's now lost for the year. A couple days later, you have linebacker Spencer Phillips, tears his ACL, he's out for the year. And then you have this whole issue with Riley Cooper. Riley Cooper was going to get the opportunity to step into Jeremy Maclin's role as the starting receiver opposite DeSean Jackson. DeSean Jackson is a one-trick pony. He's a wonderful downfield threat. For someone who's smaller and quicker, you'd think he'd be a better route runner in the slot. That's just not his game. He's a terrific downfield threat, but that's pretty much all he's going to give you. What Jeremy Maclin was able to give the Eagles was that big physical receiver on the outside. Riley Cooper is probably as close to physically Jeremy Maclin as anyone else they have on the team. He's also familiar with the system. He has been an Eagle for a while now. And Riley Cooper gets a video leaked from a concert that he was at last month where he uses a derogatory racial slur and now has been excused from the team while he seeks anger management or something along those lines. This is a huge blow for the Philadelphia Eagles. How are they going to be able to... A lot of the reason why Chip Kelly's system was able to work was at Oregon was that he had physical receivers on the outside that were able to take away some of the safety help, and that's what made his running game so effective. Is this maybe a landing spot for someone like Brandon Lloyd, who is still available? Is there now some sort of trade that the Eagles have to make? Is there someone who is down on the depth chart that is going to be able to step into that role that is now voided from Maclin and Cooper? Jason Avant has done something in the past. I just don't see Jason Avant being someone who's going to be able to take over on a week-to-week basis. The one good thing about the Eagles offense that I see this year is going to be LeSean McCoy. LeSean McCoy is almost as perfect a fit for a running back for Chip Kelly's system as anyone there is in the league right now. Maybe a Jamal Charles, maybe a CJ Spiller. But I think McCoy is a more physical runner than either of those two. And he can go stride for stride with either of those two when it comes to a foot race. So I am expecting big things from LeSean McCoy, as long as defenses aren't now putting eight in the box because they're not afraid of Michael Vick being able to thread the needle, put it wherever he wants. They'll take their chances one-on-one, maybe have a safety over the top against DeSean Jackson. But I do see big things out of McCoy this year. I do not see big things out of Vick. I do not think he will end the season as the quarterback for the Eagles. So which pretty much leaves the backup job between second-year guy Nick Foles and rookie Matt Barkley out of USC. Now, if there's one thing that we've come accustomed to is USC quarterbacks failing in the NFL. The Eagles did not spend they're not invested heavily into Barkley. They traded up into the fourth round to get him. So it's not like they owe Barkley any playing time. But from what I hear, Barkley is looking good in training camp. Granted, he's going against third-team defenses. And Nick Foles is the more experienced quarterback, as he did see a couple games last year when Michael Vick got hurt. But I just don't see either one of them being the answer this year. So my predictions for the NFC East, I see the Giants winning the division with a 10-6 record. I see the Redskins coming in second with a 9-7 record. And I think the trend continues for the Cowboys. They finish in third with an 8-8 record, and it will spell the end of Jason Garrett and Tony Romo in, although the Cowboys did just sign Romo to an extent, to a long-term extension. So the Cowboys will not win anything as long as Jerry Jones is still in charge. So Cowboys finish in third at 8-8, and the Eagles round out the division as the bottom dwellers with a 5-11 record. We'll do a quick run-through of the AFC West. It's pretty much a one-team race in the AFC West. We have the Denver Broncos. The only thing that can get in the way of the Denver Broncos is themselves, is whether it be injuries, whether it be Von Miller's suspension holding up. A couple weeks ago, we had a caller call in, and he wanted to talk about the Colts Broncos week one game. It's later on in the year because the Broncos open up against the Raiders. But he wanted to talk about Colts Broncos, and I told him that I thought Von Miller was going to win the Defensive Player of the Year this year. And I think it was hours after that that it was leaked that Von Miller was going to possibly be suspended four games for substance abuse violation. Now, this is the substance abuse violation. We don't know what it is. We don't know if it's a failed test. We don't know if it's something that was admitted from 2011. So it sounds as if Von Miller's suspension will be revoked and he will be able to play. If the Broncos stay healthy, I don't see any way they finish with a record less than 12-4. They have a three-headed monster at the wide receiver position. They have the number one receiver who no one talks about, Demaryius Thomas, is one of the up-and-coming studs. He's a big physical threat on the outside. I love what he brings to the field. They also have Eric Decker coming back. Eric Decker was one of the most efficient wide receivers when it comes to targets converted into touchdowns last year. I think he was only third. Golden Tate was the highest percentage, but I think Eric Decker was third on targets converted into touchdowns. When you have Eric Decker, who was pretty much a no-name going into the year last year, he had 13 touchdowns. Oh, James Jones was second. So Golden Tate, James Jones, and Eric Decker were your top three. So, and then they bring in the most dynamic slot receiver in the history of the NFL, Wes Welker. So Broncos, I'm going to put them down for 13-3, only because I think the AFC is as weak as the AFC has ever been. And they play in probably the most putrid division in the entire league. The team that I think will finish in second this year will be the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs, for a team that had the worst record in the league last year, had the number one pick overall. They end up going with Eric Fisher out of Central Michigan, and it really shored up the way that Andy Reid wants to run the game. They now have two talented tackles on the outsides with Fisher and Brandon Albert. They have maybe the most when you look at yards per carry over a career, Jamaal Charles has the best in NFL history. So Andy Reid has always, when he has been successful in his career, he has always had a top running back. With the Eagles, he had Brian Westbrook, and he had LeSean McCoy. They brought in Alex Smith, who is pretty much the perfect West Coast system quarterback. He's not very good throwing the ball downfield, but if you ask him to throw the ball 6 yards to Dwayne Bowe on an out pattern, he's going to put it right there. I do expect Dwayne Bowe to have a big year this year. And I do see the Kansas City Chiefs finishing in second in the division. Rounding out the division, I think the San Diego Chargers come in third with a 5-11 record, and I think your worst team in the entire NFL and prime target for Jadeveon Clowney to be picked first overall next year will go to the Oakland Raiders with a 2-14 record. All right, and joining us right now, we do have the founder of BackSportsStage.com, Randy Zelia. How are you doing tonight, Randy?
I apologize for the tardiness. It's one of those things when you go for a walk outside without your phone and you do 4 or 5 laps around your complex, you sort of lose track of time. So it was my apologies. I do apologize. Good evening, Mr. Stern. How are you tonight?
We're doing good. We just went over, we're doing the first night of our two-a-days. We're going to be previewing two divisions each show up until football season starts. We previewed the NFC East and the AFC West tonight. Who do you like out of each of those two divisions?
Which divisions again? I'm sorry, you cut out for 1 second. I apologize.
The NFC East and AFC West.
The NFC East, I do like the New York Giants, just because, you know, the talent that they still have on their roster. I think if you look at the other teams in the league, and so in that East, in the East NFC East, very difficult to really put a lot of stock in the Cowboys. The Eagles are in a rebuilding mode. And I just don't have the faith in RG3, both coming off of injury, and also, let's face it, the Giants collapsed last year. The Redskins just took advantage of the collapse. So that's what it comes down to. The AFC West, I don't really look at the San Diego Chargers as a formidable contender anymore. The Kansas City Chiefs, they have a lot of parts from other teams, like Alex Smith, Anthony Fasano. They're the number one draft pick this year. I'm very interested to see what's going to happen with them.
I'm sorry for interrupting, but with the Chiefs, the interesting thing about them last year is that they were the worst team in the league, yet they still, and I don't know how much stock you put into being named a Pro Bowler, but the Chiefs had six players named to the Pro Bowl last year. So, I mean, it says that they have talent on the roster, and I do think that I forgot to give my prediction for a record for the Chiefs. I see the Chiefs finishing with a 7-9 record this year. And that's an improvement. It's a step in the right direction. And I do think that they brought in the right coach to help fix things.
I agree. Listen, Andy Reid's a great coach. I just don't see them winning the division. I think at the end of the day, it's the Broncos. I love Payton. I love that team. Some minor injuries in training camp, but again, like I've been saying, you know, earlier today at Giants camp, I was talking with Ralph Falciano and a couple other people that we're talking about injuries in August.
Right.
Wait till September, October. If there was this stiff day of injuries, that's when you just start really talking about it. Till then, it's not even worth bringing up. It shouldn't be a concern. It should be a footnote. That's the truth.
It seems that there are more injuries in the early part of camp this year than there have been in any recent year in the past.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's just not with the Giants. It's really every team. There's teams that have DeSean Jackson got banged up a little bit in Philly the last few days. It's not really big news because it's not really something that has to be concerned about. Hakeem Nicks banged up. He'll be back on the field on Tuesday. Everyone was making a huge deal about those things. It's not really a big deal.
With Hakeem Nicks, it's a bigger deal than with other players, only because of his lack of being able to stay healthy on a consistent basis throughout his entire career.
Well, this year Hakeem Nicks is going to be more cautious about it, though, because it's a contract year. So he's going to be more cautious about it.
And I do think that some of the injuries that have kept him out of games maybe the past year or two, he'll be able to somehow find his way to muscle up enough chutzpah to get out onto the field. Yeah, we're going ethnic tonight.
Listen, at the end of the day, the New York Giants, they're going to be smart about all their guys. Snead was on the sideline today. Are they really going to worry about him in August? Because they know in September and October, because he's Tom Coughlin's son-in-law, Tom Coughlin won't have him sit out. They'll tell him.
I saw him when I was at camp on Monday. I saw him on the sideline too, and he had his leg wrapped up, but he's not going to miss any time. And from all the reports that I've read, the Giants are just being cautious with him. They know he'll be ready to go. So that to me, isn't an issue. What is an issue to me is, as we totally change gears, is the upcoming suspensions that Major League Baseball is supposed to be handing down tomorrow, including that of Alex Rodriguez. Does Alex Rodriguez, if he gets suspended through the end of the year next year, and that seems to be what all the talk is, and I'm sure there's going to be an appeal from his camp, but if it gets held up, 2015 opening day, is Alex Rodriguez wearing a Yankee uniform?
No, he's not wearing that uniform.
Now, do you think that it's going to be that he's going to retire because he can't play?
I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on him. I don't think a lot of people want this for him. I think he's going to drift away and fall away into the abyss.
I absolutely agree. The only thing that makes me, worry about that is Alex Rodriguez only thinks about Alex Rodriguez. And he's going to have $60 million left on the contract over his final 3 years that will be remaining. If he says he is able to come back and that he wants to play, the Yankees have to pay him, even if he doesn't. They can DL him, but the Yankees are going to have to pay. I think what happens is that now that it's down to 3 years, it's what, $60 million of the, what was it, over $200 million that was originally given on his contract. I think the Yankees buy him out. One, because the Yankees are going to be able to collect insurance over the next year and a half. And the thing that's going to be interesting about the insurance is whether or not his number is going to come off the projected 189, the salary cap that the Yankees are trying to get under. If his number is able to come off the cap because of the suspension, that's going to allow the Yankees to go out and spend a lot of money that they weren't going to have available to them. So I think that what we are going to see is the Yankees buy out Rodriguez, and that'll spell the end of Alex as a Yankee.
I think at this point they're going to be looking, if they can eliminate that money, there's already different things that Buck Showalter is sitting there saying and about, you know, some of their players. And it's such a tough thing because I want to see what tomorrow brings. Right now they're going to they're trying to really, really gear ahead to see if what they're going to do. Because I have a feeling, I said this before, they can't do any of these lifetime bans or anything more than 50-game suspension for him. There's no positive test. They're negotiating, and that's the one thing Alex Rodriguez has been brought up to them many times behind the scenes. There is no positive test. If there was a positive test, then there's more that they can do. Unless they're going to play the, you know, it's hurting the game of baseball rule, that's when they can start talking lifetime bans or a season and a half. But it doesn't matter about this evidence or so on and so forth. Unless they have a positive test, they can't really enforce much else than a 50-game suspension at this point.
So do you think if he appeals it and it goes to arbitration, do you think it gets reduced to 50 games?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, very interesting.
I do.
I really haven't thought about that, only because I do think that the way Major League Baseball is attacking this is that it is bad for the game, and that clause where it's not going to be because of a failed test. It's going to be that he is such a black eye to the organization that is Major League Baseball that they're going to go that way instead of the whole failed test thing, which is the way that they went about with Ryan Braun's suspension. And it seems as if that's the way they're going about with every other player that's going to be suspended this year. Johnny Peralta, Melky Cabrera, among those that are expected to be suspended.
It's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. You know me, I think you know me well enough to know, Ryan, that I don't make too many predictions. I react to the facts. And I think right now they're in the Major League Baseball, the Yankees, and A-Rod are all in a holding situation. I know there's been reports about what they're going to do, but I think you and I both know sometimes things leak out and they're not exactly the truth. If you really want to talk about stuff that's really not true, look, I'm still in that minority right now to feel that Aaron Hernandez is still going to be walking out of jail, free man, in a couple weeks because they don't have a murder weapon yet. Once you have a murder weapon, you know, I'll bet you off. But subsequential murder, you know, subsequential evidence is not enough to convict somebody in this situation. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. But they do have, in the Hernandez situation, they do have two other men in custody that if they are actual witnesses to the crime and they both tell the same story, that's going to be as devastating to Hernandez as murder weapon being found.
That's very true. That's very true. Again, we'll see how all of it plays out. Ryan, I'm going to let you do the last 4 minutes of your show. Do your thing. I apologize for my tardiness. But have a good rest of the show, and we will talk next week.
You got it. Thanks a lot, Randy.
Thanks, buddy.
So, yeah, my take on Rodriguez is that if he ends up with the year-and-a-half suspension and it gets held up, and you know that if the suspension is the year-and-a-half that Rodriguez is going to appeal, because he hired one of the most famous defense attorneys around when the story was first leaked. So he knew that he was in trouble. You saw it right away. If the suspension gets held up and he's done until the end of 2014, I think he's done as a Yankee. Whether it be he retires, whether it be the Yankees buy him out, or whether it be he just vanishes from existence. I want to thank Randy for giving us a couple minutes discussing some football and some baseball. We may have a midweek show for you this week, as I will be away next week. So stay tuned for more information with that. Once again, you can follow the show on Facebook at Beyond the Bench, or you can follow me on Twitter at rstern33bsp. Tune in to backsportspage.com. We're going to have a lot of different players available to talk about their charities. In a couple weeks, we are going to be talking with professional boxer Ricky Edwards, as he is breaking into the world of professional boxing and has looked absolutely stellar in his first two fights. He's going to give us a couple minutes as he gets ready for fight number 3 for him. So from all of us here at Back Sports Page, have a great week.